Please stand by. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's IBM teleconference, OmegaMon XE for DB2 Usage Strategies and Best Practices. Today's teleconference will last approximately 60 minutes and will include a live question and answer session. The teleconference will cover several of the concepts, facilities, and capabilities of the tool. Examples and recommendations will include a review of DB2 application monitoring and management, DB2 subsystem management, real-time monitoring, and historical analysis, performance and availability alert management, and the automation capabilities of OmegaMon XE will also be discussed. The teleconference will be hosted by Ed Woods, consulting IT specialist, IBM Tivoli Performance Automation Team. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ed Woods.
Thank you. Once again, I'm Ed Woods, a consulting IT specialist with IBM Corporation. I want to thank everyone on the line for taking the time to attend this webcast. I trust you'll find this an informative and useful topic for those of you who've used or are looking at using OmegaMon XE for DB2. What I've put together is a presentation that summarizes a lot of suggestions that I've made to customers over the last year or two about optimal ways to use the OmegaMon tool set and what components are most useful in what fashion. If we would go to the next slide, please. This is a slide I use quite often to just show the interrelationship of the main components of OmegaMon DB2, or OmegaMon in general, actually. At the top portion of the triangle, you have what I call the dashboard, the OmegaMon DE Dashboard Edition. Basically, the premise there is that all OmegaMon monitoring technologies fit into a high-level component called OmegaMon DE. This provides multi-system views, cross-platform views, a high-level monitoring capability. And underneath, in the bottom portions of the triangle on the right and the left, you see the base OmegaMon XE monitoring components. And so what happens is OmegaMon XE, as the base monitoring capability, plugs into the dashboard. OmegaMon XE provides subsystem-level monitoring capabilities, a browser GUI-type interface, as well as alerting and automation capabilities. On the other side, in the bottom part of the triangle, we see 3270 interface. 3270 interface is, of course, what we will also refer to as the classic OmegaMon, the original OmegaMon interface. So those customers who've been using OmegaMon for 15-plus, 20-plus years would recognize this 3270 classic interface, as well as its later version, what's called the CUA, Common User Access Interface. 3270 has its capabilities as well in terms of subsystem monitoring, detailed thread monitoring, historical as well as real-time. So the primary premise of what I want to cover in this presentation is interesting and powerful capabilities of OmegaMon, plus also cover the aspect of what piece is optimal to use for what challenge you're trying to deal with. And I'll show you what I'm referring to in the next few slides. So going to the next slide, which just says OmegaMon DB2 options and interfaces. Again, just to recap, we really have three primary user interface choices that you have at your disposal. On the top, you have the OmegaMon XE GUI interface. This is a Java client or a web browser. Most customers usually deploy the web browser interface going through a mechanism that we call the Tivoli Enterprise Portal. The GUI interface provides real-time as well as historical information, and importantly, it also provides very powerful automation and alerting capabilities using mechanisms called situations and policies. And I'll talk quite a bit about situations and policies in this presentation and how you can use these in a very optimal fashion. In addition, the XE interface also provides quite a bit of information vis-a-vis Plex-level data sharing type of information. So this is going to be the structures in the coupling facility, the group buffer pool, lock structures, etc. This is where you'll be able to see information on what's happening from a performance standpoint in the group buffer pool. This is where you'll be able to see details on things like global lock conflict analysis. So if you're a data sharing environment, the XE interface is a very important piece of the tool to use. The next thing down is OmegaMon Classic. This is the original OmegaMon interface. 3270 based, you get real-time as well as historical information, built upon a command structure called major and minor commands. And these major and minor commands are embedded within the various panels of the tool. And as you navigate from screen to screen, these various commands are what executes and populates the information on the screens. There's also alerting mechanisms that are stored within what are called profiles, and the alerts are what are called exceptions. This is the traditional Omegamon, as many people have used it for quite a few years. CUA interface came along after Classic and is also a 3270 capability, and it has a different look and feel than the Classic, but still is a 3270-based technology. Again, you get real-time as well as historical information, and you get warning and critical alerts and lights and indicators, etc., showing the status of what's happening inside DB2. Going to the next slide, this shows basically a summary of the major features, functions, and components of Omegamon XD for DB2 on ZOS. Now, you'll see real-time threat analysis. This includes thread performance, elapsed time, CPU time, the traditional counters that we're used to from a DB2 perspective. So this would be things like the in-DB2 times, the CPU breakouts, class 3 wait times, package information, the class 7 and 8, all this kind of information is available within the thread performance views. You also get thread detail. By that I'm referring to things like lock detail, what locks are being held, SQL detail, what is the current SQL call being executed. And then also if you're looking at things like triggers, user-defined functions, stored procedures, what is executing at the moment on the system, and showing us thread-level detail on those items as well. In addition, from a real-time perspective, you get DB2 subsystem information, and this includes information on the important pools, the virtual pools, as well as the EDM pool. And this includes details specific to pool performance, as well as being able to do snapshot analysis showing the contents of the pools. There's performance information specific to DB2 locking, as well as logging performance. And then also another important feature of the tool is going on down the list here, the application trace facility. Application trace facility provides the user with the ability to do a detailed performance analysis of a specific DB2 application thread. This is something where the user will start a specific application trace, gather the necessary trace records to a file, and then do an interactive analysis of the DB2 performance trace data. As I mentioned before, you have a choice of interfaces. Continuing on to the right-hand portion of the slide, at the top right corner, we have object analysis. Object analysis does a detailed I/O and get page analysis of the DB2 subsystem, correlates this activity by object, and also importantly by application. So the idea then is that you can see what I/O is happening on the subsystem, what get page activity, see which objects are driving that I/O and get page activity, and then in turn be able to determine what applications are driving that particular I/O. Continuing on down the list, lock conflict analysis. Who's the holder? Who's the waiter? What resource is being held or waited on, et cetera, et cetera. This kind of information can be looked at both on the 3270 level, as well as if you're in a data sharing environment, you would look at this using the XC interface. Near-term historical is a very useful facility. Near-term historical basically implies, show me what history, what has run through the system in the last few hours, or maybe the last day or whatever. This is typically where it's useful. This is that time frame where you don't have the ability to necessarily run out and run a report out of SMF because you don't have access to that SMF data quite yet, but you need to be able to see what happened an hour ago, 2 hours ago, 3 hours ago to solve a problem that happened earlier in the day. Near-term historical gives you the ability to go back and do that analysis. In addition, there's other historical analysis functions. Batch reporting capabilities, XE historical capabilities that are done within the GUI, and then I also mentioned earlier DB2plex level monitoring, showing things like coupling facility structures, global lock analysis, group buffer pools, etc. And then also, quite importantly, the automation and alerting capabilities, which I'll talk quite a bit about a little later on here as well. So this is the general overview of the major components, capabilities of Omegamon broken out in different categories. If we go to the next slide, this shows where you can take advantage of these particular components. The premise is then that there are certain things that you can do in either tool. There are certain things that are going to be best done in a specific portion of the tool. So basically, for example, if I want to see thread performance information, elapsed times, CPU get page counts, I can use either the GUI, the XE GUI interface, or I can go into the 3270 interface to get this kind of information. continuing on down the list, if I need to see thread details, in other words, specifics on individual lock acquires and releases, see specifics on the SQL call being executed, as well as more detailed breakouts of plan and package level information, I need to go to the 3270 interface, either the Classic or CUA for that. Continuing on down there, same idea as well then when we're looking at the DB2 subsystem information. If I want to see pool performance, EDM pool, as well as buffer pool performance, I can get that kind of information from either the GUI, the XE interface again, or from 3270. However, if I want to take that to the next level and get snapshot breakouts, see detail vis-a-vis what's happening within the pools, what are the contents inside of the pools, that level of granularity is something I need to use the 3270 interface to be able to do. Application trace, 3270-based function. Object analysis, I can get object analysis information either within the GUI interface or within 3270. Lock conflict analysis, I can get in either place. Near-term historical, that's the thing I mentioned before wherein I can go in and see what was happening in the last hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, a 3270-based function. There are historical capabilities that are 3270-based, as well as history that's specific to the XE GUI interface. And then, as I mentioned before, the DB2 Plex level, in other words, the data sharing type of views, that is a GUI type of information layer, and you'll need to go to the XE GUI interface to see detail on that. Automation capabilities, these would be the alerting and analysis mechanisms that, as well as the ability to issue commands to the console and to DB2. These things are quite unique to the GUI interface, the XE interface. While there are command capabilities that are built into the 3270, typically to be able to leverage 3270 alerting capabilities in an automated fashion, you typically would need to interface it with some type of additional automation package, such as SA, for example. The beauty and the power of the OmegaMon XE GUI is that you have automation that's built right into the monitoring tool, and I'll show you several examples of this. So going to the next slide, this is where we see an overview of the architecture of the OmegaMon tool as it exists right now. And so what we have is a set of address spaces. You have what's called the OmegaMon collector, or the classic collector as I oftentimes refer to it. The OmegaMon collector address space is where the real-time subsystem analysis as well as thread analysis occurs. That's where the object analysis happens. Object analysis is the I/O breakout. And then also the near-term historical data gathering occurs. And so you'll see two boxes there, a historical for subsystem DB2A and a historical for subsystem DB2B. Basically what happens is the near-term history collector goes out and gathers history data on an ongoing basis and stores it in a set of VCM wraparound files. These VCM wraparound files then fill and then go to the next one, fill and then go to the next one, and the data is available for viewing in VCM interactively within the 3270 interface. The OmegaMon CUA interface task, which is a box in and of itself, it's a separate address space. Its job is basically to provide the user with the CUA interface. I have one or two examples here of the CUA interface in the 3270 portion of the presentation. Most of the slides I'll be showing you, though, will be showing the classic interface. The other address space of the three that I show in this particular schematic show an OmegaMon XE agent address space. Basically, this job of this task is to go out and gather the real-time data, as well as historical potentially, and broker that information from the OmegaMon monitoring task running on ZOS and then forwarding this information up to the portal. So what happens then is the OmegaMon XE agent gathers its information and forwards it to a software process called the Tivoli Enterprise Management Server, or the TEMS. That's one of the black boxes that's over on the right-hand portion of the slide. Now, as I show here, you can run this management server on Z, Unix, Windows. So there's various places you can actually run this. So to be architecturally accurate, this TEMS box could actually be running on ZOS right there along with the agent and the CUA address space and the collector. Now, there's also a component called a portal server. It's the job of the portal server to build the actual GUI screens that I'll be showing you several examples of. Somewhere, in order to be able to run the XE GUI interface, you have to have a portal server. And up until recently, that required a Windows box. But recently we've also added Linux support, so you'll be able to do things like run the portal server on a Linux on Intel or run it on Linux running on top of a ZBox. So this is the base architecture of how the tools fit and what the address spaces are out there and what talks to what. Going to the next slide then, this is where we can talk a little bit about the strengths of the various interface options. In other words, what would I use for what purpose? This is a question I oftentimes get because with a Megamon now, you have a very broad array of capabilities in management infrastructures and technologies. So the question is then, well, why would I use this given tool for this function or that function? So typically when I work with customers, these are the kind of recommendations that I make. From the XE GUI perspective, the strengths of that portion of the tool are, well, first of all, it's a very customizable, flexible interface. So it's great for showing high-level overview of all DB2 activity, being able to see things like thread activity across multiple subsystems, across multiple LPARs to get a full-blown data sharing kind of a view of DB2 thread activity, for example. So data sharing performance information, as I mentioned earlier, is found primarily in the XE GUI interface. If you're in the 3270 portion of the tool, you will find a few references to some things like group buffer pool information and things like that, but the lion's share of the data sharing performance information, structured data, global lock analysis is really found in the XE interface. The next bullet point under the XE GUI, I think, is one of the most powerful parts, and I'm also going to be doing another webcast on this particular topic in a week or so. And that relates to the customizable alerts and then also the automation and corrective action capability that's built into the XE GUI interface. By customizable alerts, the one thing that is very powerful about the XE interface is the ability to really alert on any item or combination of items of information that is being monitored by the tool. And so you have much more flexibility, much more ability to use Boolean logic and things like that to make the alerts truly meaningful. And that's really key, is meaningful alerts. You know, a lot of tools can generate all sorts of alerts, but if the alert is not meaningful, then it really just becomes noise in the background and becomes more of an annoyance. The ability to make an alert meaningful is really key. And then, in addition, the ability to have automation capabilities that are bundled in the tool makes it quite useful as well. Takes the technology to the next level, if you will. 3270 has its strengths as well. 3270, classic as well as CUA interface, has the ability to do things still like do more detailed analysis, more looking at threads. So in addition to seeing the typical timings, elapsed time, CPU, get page counts, et cetera, that you would expect to see from a DB2 thread view, you'll also see more detail vis-a-vis the SQL activity in the text of the SQL calls, lock detail information, lock acquire and release information, IO activity breakout details, et cetera. This information is something that's found in the 3270 portion of the tool. Subsystem activity information. You know, you can look at the virtual pool and EDM pool information, for example, using either XE or 3270, but the 3270 also has snapshot detail breakout capabilities wherein you can go into more detail specific to the contents of the pools. What objects are in the virtual pool? What information is contained within the EDM pool? And I'll show you examples of what I'm referring to here. The application trace facility, that again is where you can do a detailed analysis of a specific thread. And this is a 3270 function at this point. Object analysis for non-data sharing subsystems. So in other words, if you want to do the object analysis breakout and you're running not a data sharing environment, but what I would call single subsystem type DB2, you still will need the 3270 to be able to see that information. In addition, there's historical considerations when we're talking XE versus 3270. The 3270 is where you're going to need to go to see the near-term history, which is what happened in the last 1 hour, 2 hour, 3 hours. The XE GUI has history as well, but its history is in the form of a snapshot historical. So in other words, this is going to gather information every n number of minutes and store that information within its own set of data stores. One question I oftentimes get when we talk about historical is, are these two mutually exclusive? And the answer is no, they're not. You can have both of these, and they both serve an important purpose. The near-term history is where I can have granular information that shows specific events, when they occurred, when they finished, et cetera, et cetera. The XE GUI interface snapshot information, basically this gives me the ability to see across a moment in time what was happening, what was the mix of threads, what was the combination of workloads. Because especially in the database technology, a lot of times the problem is not so much how long did job A run, but how long was job A contending with job B, because lock contention and things like that are a big area of performance bottlenecks and problems in database. And so the ability to see a single snapshot that shows me what was running at a given moment in time in a subsystem is quite useful. Going to the next slide, the heading in the slide is a Megamon XE GUI interface, integration, consolidation, customization, and flexibility. The point on this slide is that DB2 is oftentimes part of a much bigger picture. And so what I'm showing you here is an example of what we call the Omegamon DE Dashboard Edition. If you remember the triangle slide that I showed a few minutes earlier, you have the Omegamons at the base, which is what I'm showing on this slide here, that feed into an overview. And the overview is the graphic that we're seeing here that shows a variety of subsystems. So here we have MQ series, IMS, DB2, as well as the ZOS operating system, coupling facility information, shown in a graphic overview layout. And then you have the ability to click on the various icons and drill down to get detailed information. So the icons on the graphic represent the status of monitored resources. So we're monitoring Z, we're monitoring DB2, we're monitoring MQ, as well as WebSphere, etc. And then if there's a problem with any one of these resources, you would see the color and the shape of the icon change. So if we go to the next slide, we'll see that ZOS in this particular example has an alert. So the shape of the icon has changed from a circle to a triangle. The icon has changed color as well. Now, these particular icons are one that I happen to use a lot, but you can use other icons as well. You have control over these mechanisms. I happen to just design things typically using this approach because I find them easy to see and use and navigate from. The red icon highlights a problem. If I see that problem, I can position my cursor over the icon, and then I'll get a flyover window that will tell me what the problem is. So in this case, I see that I have a CPU critical problem on what LPAR, and it also highlights it as well over on the left corner area on what I would call the navigation tree. The alerts that we see on this particular graphic interface are driven by a mechanism called a situation. A situation is basically just another way of specifying an alert. The nice thing about the usage of the situation technology is that you have a lot more flexibility in terms of how you name the given alerts. Situations may therefore be given meaningful names. In other words, I can, instead of using a crypto techno-speak kind of a name, I can literally give it a name that says MVS CPU critical, so that someone from a help desk or some other function that may not be as technically literate as a systems programmer with 20 years experience can still derive some meaning in terms of what the nature of the problem is. So from a recommendation standpoint, one thing I always suggest to customers is as you build and deploy Omegamon XE technology and start to build alerts is, first of all, have some naming standards. So, for example, what I've done on this particular alert, we see it's called EW, MVS CPU critical, is typically for alerts that I build myself, and this particular one I'm actually just using an internal demonstration system here, I put my initials, EW, on the front, to make those the first two characters. So I can very quickly and easily find the various alerts that I've built. So typically for customers, I recommend a similar thing. A couple characters from your company name, put those on the front of the situations that you've built. Why would this be necessary? Because with each Omegamon, you get a set of alerts provided out of the box, a set of these situations. You can use the ones that we provide, and that's perfectly valid to do. But a lot of customers like to make adjustments, tweaks, changes, etc. So this is a good way to be able to very quickly and easily find the ones that you've altered and made changes to. However you do it, as I say, make the names meaningful, have some kind of consistency, and the consistency as well should apply, we recommend, to things like how often the alerts are checked, etc. And I'll show you examples of what I'm referring to there regarding the situation intervals and settings. So going to the next slide, what I'm showing you here is an example of what we call the situation editor. So here I've actually created an alert called a demo thread alert, and you have the ability to specify not only just single conditions on the condition tab, which is what we've hit here, but also multiple conditions. So you have the ability to specify Boolean logic, and or logic, etc. The idea then is that you can pull as many items of information, or what we refer to in a Megamon speak as attributes, into the alert. The idea then is that you can have different levels of alerting depending upon what the application is, or depending upon who drove the application. You can make it dependent upon things like time of day and combinations of these things. Each line that we see when we're looking in the middle of the situation editor here, each line represents a condition, and as you add more lines, that represents OR logic. So you have AND and OR logic that's built into it. The beauty of this approach, then, is that you can have very robust alerting, but still do it with a relatively few number of situations or alerts. You don't have to go out and deploy literally hundreds of these things. If you do a good job crafting and building these things, you can do very sophisticated monitoring with a relatively small number of alerts. So again, one recommendation I typically make to customers is take advantage of the Boolean logic capabilities of the situation editor, and rather than deploy a lot of alerts, see if you can do more with less. That gives you the added advantage then of also not having so much maintenance of these things as you go from version to version and release to release. The next slide talks a little bit about performance automation, automated corrections. One of the things that I mentioned that the XE interface is strong at is automation. There are built-in automation capabilities and automated correction capabilities included within the tool. So it gives you the ability to monitor problem applications on an ongoing basis. For example, monitoring runaway threads, the ability to automate killing a thread, as an example I'll show you later on in the presentation. Because you have very flexible Boolean logic capabilities that are built into the situation editor, you can make this automation quite intelligent and to target problem applications. You can also use the same mechanism capability to monitor subsystem issues and automate corrective actions for those as well, and I'll show you an example of that. The beauty of the approach is it's all driven by the GUI interface. You don't need to write Rex code. You don't need to create any special procedural language code. This is it. It's all clicks and drags within the XE interface. Going to the next slide that says automated corrections, runaway thread scenario. So here, basically, I'll show you an example where I'm going to look at a given thread, given plan name. If it hits a certain get page count, that will therefore constitute my check. So this is an example of AND logic. And if these two items are true, we will then go ahead and drive an action. The next slide shows the action, which in this case is going to be an actual DB2 cancel command that will be populated straight to the DB2 console. So we'll go ahead and put the DB2 cancel command on the console, and if this check is true, in other words, if the EW demo runaway thread situation is true, it will go ahead and issue the appropriate cancel command. The next slide, which says monitoring the problem thread, shows here I actually have fired up a thread, and I'm actually monitoring it using the XE GUI interface. And what I've done is I've just made a very simple little screen that shows just a few key items of information that I'm monitoring: the elapsed time, the get page count, the thread status. I can see it's in DB2. I see the get page count. Well, it's hit that 10,000 number that I was checking for. And so what will happen then, as soon as it hits that, you'll see red lights go off, which you see going off on the navigator tree. And then the next thing you'll see is on the next slide, you'll see the automated action that has been issued. So the automated correction, the cancel command has been issued. So we see that the thread has been terminated and the runaway thread, my example runaway thread, if you will, has been resolved. Now, this is just a simple example of how you can build a situation, monitor for a problem, and then issue a command to the console. The commands that you see in this example here are going straight to the ZOS console. So I use the example of a DB2 kill command, but there could be any one of a variety of various console commands, DB2 commands, etc. Anything that's valid that you can put through an MVS ZOS console is something that you can use this mechanism and take advantage of. Another thing that I'll mention is that you can pass all sorts of variable attribute information through this command interface as well. So you can do basically what amounts to command informational substitution as part of the cancel command, or not necessarily the cancel command, any of the commands that you would issue to this thing. So continuing on then to the next slide that says performance automation and policies. Some general recommendations. There's two mechanisms that come into play here. The first one I showed you is what's called a situation, which is a simple fire and forget type of scenario. In other words, we detected a problem, we issued a command, we fired off the command. There's another mechanism that's more sophisticated and powerful that we call a policy. A policy is useful for more sophisticated performance automation scenarios, and I'll show you a couple examples. A policy takes the automation to the next level in the sense that you can do multiple commands, check to see if the commands worked, and then issue other commands based upon what happened prior. So it's a more sophisticated mechanism than the simple situation scenario that I've taken you through so far. The premise ultimately is that when possible, if you can correct problems at machine speed, that is a useful thing to do. Now, sometimes you may not be able to correct the entire problem, but maybe being able to just issue a tweak so that you can keep a system running and avoid an outage is quite useful. So policies allow for ultimately the next level of this automation in that you can do things that are more correlated, more sophisticated, and more complex, if you will. Going to the next slide, it says using policies for dynamic performance management. What we're looking at here is a scenario wherein we're checking for a couple of things. First, we're checking to see is DB2 queuing. So you see an icon that says wait until that the EWDB2 demo thread queuing is true. So in other words, we're looking to see if we're queuing to create threads. And then we'll also look to see if there is a delay that the OmegaMon CICS is picking up as well, and that's impacting CICS response time. If both of these are true, then we can issue a command to the console to perhaps do something like in this example, issue a set sysparm command, load in a different zparm setting, whatever, make a change that may not be a permanent fix, but will allow us to do something to at least keep things running until we can figure out exactly why we're backing up. So going to the next slide, we see the actual issuing of the command, the set sysparm command, to the console. We're going to activate a new zparm setting, and then going on from there, you'll be able to see messages on the console, just like what we saw before. And so what that will show then is the same premise. We're going to issue a command, and then see it to the console, and then you could issue other commands and on from there. This is an example of, again, a policy versus a situation. Takes the premise of the situation and elevates it to another level in that you can do things that are more sophisticated and targeted and pull in information not only from just DB2, but as in the example I showed you as well, from other OmegaMon monitors. And this is where you truly elevate the power of it. And what's nice as well is, again, there's no Rex code or other things you have to write. This is the whole automation scenario here contained within a GUI interface. Going to the next slide that says, use OmegaMon XE GUI to build graphic overviews. This is always something I recommend that customers do. I like to, when I deploy the tool within a site, is not only just take the basic overviews that come out of the box, but try to build some overviews that target the key audiences. So, for example, here, this was an overview I built for a customer that had a four-way as well as a three-way data sharing environment. The icons represented the statuses of the individual DB2s in the data sharing group. We tracked the status of the coupling facility, we tracked the status of MVS and KIX, and then the icons then also provide a drill-down capability for more detail. Building something like this is easy to do and provides a very powerful overview, if you will, of what's happening across DB2 on multiple LPARs and subsystems. The next slide refers to using the GUI to see a global view of all DB2 activity. So here what we're seeing is actually threads from multiple DB2s, so it might be a little hard to see in the red squared area. I have a thread at the top that's coming from a subsystem D71G, and then I have a bunch of threads coming from D71 Charlie, and there could be other DB2s as well. The idea is basically to see a global view of threads across multiple DB2 subsystems consolidated to a single view, and then you can add additional filter logic as well, and then just manage threads more on an exception basis, looking for threads on whatever subsystem that have met or exceeded certain criteria and highlight and do detailed analysis on those. And that's something that's quite easy to do using the GUI interface. Going to the next slide that says create custom queries to build the aggregate views, this is the mechanism that you would use to build something like the aggregate view I showed you on the prior slide. The premise is basically this. You have a query mechanism that's built within the tool. You can specify what queries of information that you want to place on the screen, and then you can also specify in the example I'm showing here which DB2s you want to pull that information from. So here, I can pull my DB2 info from DSN A, B, C, D, as well as T, pull it all onto a single aggregated view, and then if I want to apply additional filtering mechanisms and post-process the data from there as well, so be it. Very simple to do using the GUI interface. Another thing I'll mention is, on the next slide, the ability to integrate 3270 into the XE GUI displays. 3270, as I talked about earlier, is still an important portion of the tool and has its functions and capabilities, and you need to leverage and take advantage of those. And so it exists, the capability within the tool to be able to pull that 3270 interface right into the XE GUI interface, and so here's an example of that here. The next slide refers to the setup of the 3270 in that you have scripting mechanisms and other capabilities built into it, so you can actually do keystroke memory scripts, record those scripts, run those scripts, edit the scripts, etc., so that when you tie 3270 displays into the XE GUI, you can actually drive things to certain screens, etc., so it makes the integration quite nice and powerful. Now, this segue then into 3270 then takes us to the next major portion of the tool coverage, which is now, I've talked about what areas where the XE will be most useful, and that's going to give you the overview, the automation, the big picture view, data sharing type views, coupling facility information, those kinds of things. Now, as I implied earlier, 3270 is useful from a deep dive analysis perspective. So when we're talking 3270, typically we're talking things like what we're looking at here, which is classic interface. From the classic interface main menu, it's a series of letter commands then to drill down and select information on different types of resources. So we can look at thread views, lock conflict information. R for resource managers is where I go to see buffer pool, EDM pool information, etc. O for object analysis to see database I/O detail. All these various breakouts and capabilities exist within the classic interface. If I go to the next slide that says thread activity overview, this is if I'd put a T command in, and now what I see is the thread overview, and I see this thread. I can also see this view by plan name or by package. I can look at it either way. Some places care more about package than plan. And then you would position your cursor on any line to get detail. You can also position your cursor in a column to sort by the column. So say, for example, you wanted to sort by get page. You would put the cursor in the get page column, then hit F10, and then that would sort it descending by get page. If you're not sure what function commands exist on the display, you'll see on the second line of this particular screen, you'll see it says F1 is help, back is F3, and then over on the right, you'll see sort is F10, zoom is F11. So if you're not sure if there's a sort or a zoom on a display, you'll be shown here up in the top line of the classic screen in question. The next slide shows an example, analyze thread lock detail. So this is a good example of where if you need to see this type of level of information specific to the thread, the lock detail, what resources, what's being held, what's the owner, what level of locking, etc., this kind of information is still something you need to go to classic interface to see. So there's other letter commands as well to get additional details. So if you want to see things like the SQL information, which is what I show on the next slide, example viewing the currently executing SQL statement, this kind of information, you'll still need to go to classic interface or CUA 3270 to see that level of detail. And now we're looking at a 24-line screen. You hit F8 to scroll down and see the additional SQL text detail. You can also, as I note on here, just hit enter and you'll be able to see the calls as it goes through the system. So each time you hit enter, you refresh the screen and on it goes from there. The next slide shows another example of detail that you would need to go to the classic or CUA interface to get. So here we're looking at things like buffer pool details specific to the thread in question. So we're showing individual breakouts by BP0, and if it talked to BP1, you would see that as well. And again, you would F8 scroll down to see that level of detail. So the get page, IO counts, etc., those types of things are shown in classic interface, as well as on the next example, which shows object information. So here we're looking at a portion of the object analysis data that I've referred to earlier. Object analysis breakouts the IO and get page activity for the subsystem and then also in turn correlates it back to the threads. This is an example of the IO and get page information gathered by object analysis correlated to the specific thread in question that we're looking at here. So here we're seeing get page counts, here we're seeing re-IO counts, etc., a number of IOs, and we're seeing this broken out by objects. So you'll see the database as well as the space name. and this is for a specific thread in question here. You can also, using object analysis, break this data out for the subsystem as a whole. What I'm showing you here is an example for a specific thread. Again, to see this level of information, if you're not in a data sharing environment, then you need to go to the 3270 to see this type of data. The next slide refers to a major facility called Application Trace Facility, or ATF. ATF allows you to see detailed tracing of DB2 application activity. This information is stored within a VSAM file and then is analyzable using the Omegamon 3270 interface to see the breakouts of what happened. SQL level information, source scan information, lock information, elapsed times, SQL level detail times, etc. So it's a very useful application trace facility. Going to the next slide, these are some of the collection options. There's actually a few more I couldn't fit on the screen here, but basically what we see here is that you can specify a data set name where you keep the data stored to. If you don't specify a data set name, the trace data is actually traced to memory. You can filter by plan name, auth ID, job name, Kix transaction, and then there's some switches at the bottom that specify do you gather lock data or scan data. Generally, if all you want is a trace of SQL activity and what calls were issued in what sequence, you don't need to see information down the individual lock, acquire and releases, down the scan level information. My suggestion would be, say, to set lock data and scan data to no. You'll end up with a much smaller trace, and you'll be able to trace for a much longer period of time. If you need to see all that granular detail, then obviously you'll need to set those options to yes, but you'll get a lot more records of information as a result. The next slide shows the application trace event detail. This is a simple example. So here we see things like, this is where I actually had all the options set to yes. And so we see the start of the open cursor, the start of the sort. You see the start of a lock acquire, the start of a scan, the end of the scan, what objects were scanned, how many rows, how many pages, etc. So this is the most detailed level of tracing. If you need this level of granularity, then you would set all the options I mentioned to yes. If you don't need that level of granularity, then my suggestion is, you know, say, for example, all you want to see is just a SQL summary, how many times certain calls were executed, how long they took, what the flow of the calls was, for example, then you may not need that, and therefore set them to no, and you'll be able to do a longer trace for a longer period of time and get a longer flow of what happened within the application. The next slide refers to some other stuff that's specific to 3270. These are the snapshot views. There's snapshot detail capabilities for buffer pools as well as for EDM pool, and both of these are quite useful. I like to be able to take information like what's available within the buffer pool snapshot detail and use that for buffer pool analysis and tuning and tweaking, etc. You can sort these. You can also do additional zooms for detail from this. So here we're showing a view of objects within a buffer pool, BP0, and we're showing how many virtual pool pages currently are in the pool. But if you want more detail, you would position your cursor, hit F11, and then you would see what's on the next slide, which shows the object detail. Show specifics to what's the average delay times, the average IO wait time, sync as well as async for this given object. And this will give you very nice information that you can use for buffer pool tuning and analysis. The next slide shows the EDM pool snapshot, similar kind of deal. Here we're showing a breakout summary of the various structures within the EDM pool, but the next thing that's more interesting is the next set of screens. So if I position my cursor F11, I now see, for example, a breakout of the contents of the EDM pool. In other words, what structures are contained within there, what plan names, or depending on whatever structure I'm looking at within the EDM pool. And then the next slide that shows EDM pool snapshot analysis, this is one that I find quite useful as well. This is an example of the EDM pool dynamic SQL cache snapshot. So what we're looking at here is actually a breakout of the contents of the EDM pool, the dynamic SQL cache. What statements are within the dynamic SQL cache? How many times these statements have been executed? The CPU, the elapsed time, wait times, get page counts, etc. And you're actually able to, as you can see in the lower portion of the screen, see the actual SQL text that's contained for that particular dynamic SQL cache. This is very useful information when we're talking about tuning and tweaking the DSC. And oh, by the way, these are examples of how the data looks when we're talking CUA interface versus classic interface. But the information is available as well in Classic. So those are all examples of 3270, the deep dive analysis aspect of it, as opposed to the information you get in the GUI. the last portion of the presentation, I want to cover a little bit on historical monitoring. So going to the next slide that says historical monitoring considerations and options. You always have a trade-off, cost of monitoring versus the relative value of the data, the collection overhead, quantity of data, as opposed to the analytic value of the data. And you're always doing a trade-off when you consider your various history options and things like that. One of the things you always want to keep in mind is ease of retrieval, which I mentioned on the right side under value of data. That's one of the nice things about the near-term historical capability is ease of retrieval. It's something you can get at quite easily and quickly. Going to the next slide, history data options. You're going to have your accounting data, which is your application information. You're going to have your statistics data, which is your DB2 subsystem performance data, typically done in intervals. There's also performance and audit traces that may or may not be turned on depending on what kind of information you may require or need to be gathered. And then there's also snapshot history. Snapshot history is not going to use traces, but basically is going to use information already gathered by the monitors, and then that information is then in turn stored in the data store and then can be reviewed for later analysis. Going to the next slide, this shows the OmegaMon XC historical data gathering capabilities and flow. What we're looking at here is basically then our address spaces, as I've showed before. We have our OmegaMon collector. The historical OmegaMon DB2s, you're going to have a historical near-term history collector for DB2A, a historical DB2 collector for DB2B, and a set of vSAM files that support that. The viewing of the data is controlled and managed by the OmegaMon 3270 interface. And as I implied earlier a couple slides ago, one of the nice things about near-term historical is the data is easy to access. It's readily retrievable and available. The next slide that says near-term history, this shows an example of one of the near-term historical slides. So here what we're seeing is thread history for a given time interval, and each line shows just a summary view of a given thread invocation. If you want detail information specific to the thread in question, you would put your cursor on the line in question. So if I wanted to see detail for the plan demo 1, I would put my cursor on that particular line, hit F11, zoom, and then it would pull that accounting information for that particular thread up onto my screen. This is stuff that's interactively easily accessible, and again, the ease of retrieval is the key. That's what makes this near-term history data very valuable, is that I don't have to wait until tomorrow's SMF extract to run batch reports, et cetera, et cetera. It's easily accessible to me online interactively within the OmegaMon monitor. Now again, the near-term history function is a 3270-based function. It's not available, at least as of yet, in the XE GUI capability. The history that's specific to the XE GUI is slightly different, but there's history as well. So going to the next slide that says OmegaMon XE for DB2 integrated historical support. What we're looking at here is a more complex schematic than what I showed you before, but what we're looking at here is the ability of the XE infrastructure, if you will, to gather history information and to store it either at the level of the XE agents or to store it at the level of the management server, and then in turn send that data to a history data warehouse. It all integrates within the portal GUI interface. The beauty of this, then, is you can gather snapshot history and send that data to a history data warehouse. And as I show you, the things that are indicated in the red, the history balloons, as well as the lines, and then the history data warehouse, this is a history function that's above and beyond what you get with the near-term historical. So again, these are not mutually exclusive options. You can run the near-term history collector and still have the history data warehouse that's part of the Tivoli portal infrastructure. To access OmegaMon XE snapshot history, you would click the history icon, which is one of the icons that shows up in the corner of the various screens, and then you can specify your time frame, the last hour, 2 hours, 4 hours, custom time spans, etc. And then you'll see an example like on the next slide. So here we're seeing lock information, lock wait times, etc. And now I'm only gathering these over 1 hour intervals. This is a very simple example, but you can control the granularity of how often this type of information is gathered, and you can control what categories of information that we're looking at here. A couple other things I want to mention is what's going to be happening in the future with OmegaMon and DB2PE and DB2PM. I'm sure this is a question many folks have. So looking at the next slide that says merging the monitors, what we have now, or what we will have shortly, I should say, is a comprehensive DB2 performance monitoring solution that actually merges OmegaMon and DB2PE and OmegaMon and DB2PM. And so the new product offerings will be OmegaMon XE for DB2PM and OmegaMon XE for DB2PE. So the question is, well, what do I get if I'm one customer or the other? Well, if you're in a Megamon customer, you get some powerful capabilities. You get DB2 Connect monitoring. You get the powerful historical reporting capabilities that come with DB2 PM and PE. You get the performance data warehouse function that comes with PE. You get the PE GUI as well, and even more granular snapshot history capabilities than what I've shown you heretofore. If you're a PE customer, well, you get things like the near-term history function that I've showed you. You get things like the object analysis that I've talked about. You get 3270 interface. You get the Omegamon XE GUI with all the automation and command capabilities that I've shown you. You get the ability to integrate information from a variety of sources, MVS kicks, IMS, monitoring, etc., to a single portal view. All of this ties together quite nicely. The next slide shows an example of the Connect monitoring. So here we're showing an example of what's coming through DB2 Connect, including SQL statement level detail, etc. You get a lot of information specific to what's happening within DB2 Connect gateways integrated directly within the Omegamon XE portal. So just to summarize, Omegamon offers many options in terms of interfaces and capabilities. You get the XE, which is the high level, alerting, analysis, automation. You get the 3270, which is in essence your deep dive analysis tool. Historical options, near-term history, integrated within 3270. You also get your XE GUI interface, historical snapshot data. And then also, you will be getting in the next version, due out shortly, a merger of monitoring technologies, XE for DB2PM and Omegamon XE for DB2PE. And so with that, next slide, I thank you. And now I will turn it back over to the moderator. Thank you very much, and I look forward to answering your questions.
Thank you, Ed. Before we take your questions, we would like to ask you to participate in a brief electronic survey. Your feedback is important to us, and we do appreciate the time you take to answer these questions. To participate, simply press the star key followed by the number that best corresponds to your choice. Please listen to all options before making your selection. Question 1, please evaluate your level of satisfaction with today's teleconference. If it was high, press star 1. If it was medium, press star 2. Or if it was low, press star 3. And we'll pause for just a moment. Question 2. What was the level of technical information presented in this teleconference? If it was at the right level, press star 1. If it was not technical enough, press star 2. If it was more technical than I needed to hear, press star 3. Question 3. Which DB2 performance monitor do you currently use? If it is IBM Omegamon DB2, press star 1. If it is a non-IBM DB2 monitor, press star 2. If you do not have any DB2 monitors, press star 3. And once again, we'll pause. Question 4. When considering DB2 performance management tools, which one of the following areas is of greatest interest to you? If availability, press star 1. If SQL performance tuning, press star 2. If integration with ZOS and application monitoring, press star 3. If all of the above, press star 4. And we'll pause before our last question. And our final question today, are you interested in receiving additional information regarding the product discussed today? If yes, press star 1. If no, press star 2. And that concludes our survey. Thank you all for your participation. Now let's move to your questions. To ask your questions, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone at any time. At this time, I will turn the call over to Ed while we wait for questions.
Thank you. I want to thank everyone for taking the time to attend the conference today. I hope it was informative. And I'll be happy to entertain any questions. that we have in the time remaining about a Megamon, Megamon DB2.
Once again, it is star 1, please, if you have a question.
Sure.
And we do have a question from Steve Barth with Intercontinental.
Yeah, I wanted to know if the reporting, the batch reporting characteristics of PE or performance monitors are going to be included in this, or if that's going to be taken out or what.
Right, that's a good question. I don't think I'd get a lot of argument from anyone if I had made the statement that the historical reporting capabilities of PE and PM were probably best of breed in the industry.
Right.
And it makes sense that that's what's going to be the historical reporting facility going forward. So, yeah, I only had a couple slides, so I didn't get into all the various details. But,
okay.
Yes, that is what's going to happen, is you'll see the historical reporting in PM and PE being the go-forward piece.
So there will be a whole lot of changes we'll need to make for our ongoing reporting on that end.
I wouldn't think so. If you're you're reporting with that tool now,
yeah.
Because basically, what's gonna happen is it's a two-phase process for the merger of the tools. Phase one is basically the consolidation of the monitoring infrastructure. So in other words, being able to run PE componentry as well as a Megamon componentry from a common set of address-based collectors, if you
okay.
will. But the user interfaces and things from the prior capabilities will still be there. And then in the next go-around, those things will then in turn be consolidated into the portal capabilities, et cetera. But PM reporting, I think, is best of breed, and that's going to stick around.
Good.
And once again, it is star 1, please, if you do have a question or comment today. And Mr. Wood, there are no further questions at this time.
Very good. I guess I answered everyone's questions. Well, I thank everyone for taking the time to attend, and hope you have a good day.
That does conclude our conference, everyone. We thank you for your participation. Have a great day.